Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1336, we feature four stories by new Life Rattle writer Zili Wong. Zili Wong was born in 1994 and raised in China, where her father is an architect and her mother an auditor. As rare as it is in China, her parents have two daughters, Zili, the eldest, and her six-year-old sister, Wai Ling. A river flows beside Zili's early childhood home in Yangzhou, a small town with only one movie theater. When Zili was nine, her family left the quiet of Yangzhou for Changsha, a fast-paced southern city with 6 months of blazing summer. Zili moved away from home in 2010 when she turned 16. She came to Canada, where she attended an international high school in Hamilton before moving to Mississauga for university. Zili Wong now studies digital media and professional writing at university, and has great passion for writing, archery, and cooking. Tonight's featured stories capture the experience of a university student with such precise detail that you feel as if you suffer through the frustrations of living in residence or a disappointed parent's response to a failing grade right alongside the narrator. The unique aspect of Zili Wong's stories is that as you suffer, you also gain insight into those who deliver the torment. Zili leaves us with the feeling that we are all in the same boat, making our way through life as best we can, a richness that extends the breadth of Zili's writing far beyond the surface theme of university life. Tonight's first two stories drop us into the midst of the day-to-day struggle of living with an assortment of different characters brought together in one house through circumstance. Shared cooking space, shared living space, and thin walls trigger overwrought reactions and moments of brilliant, subtle humor. Let's listen now as Zili Wong reads her stories, Territory and Parasite Crisis, tonight on Life Rattle.
Territory by Zili Wong. Noreen's door creaks open. "Guys," her voice croaks as she points at the electric clock on the stove. "It's already 7:30. I gawk at her, not knowing what to say. William leans back on the chair in the middle of our kitchen. We all live in the same student housing, and William is the only one that I have made friends with. He spins his chair, looks across the kitchen at Noreen, then at me. I glance at the kitchen counter. Sliced tomatoes line up on the stained white cutting board, engraved with cut lines from years of service. A pot of water bubbles on the stove. Clouds of steam rise from the pot, dance in the cool air, and then disappear into the overhead fan. Dry noodles lie on the plate beside the stove, waiting for their bath in the boiling water. William secretly exchanges a disgusted look with me. I turn my head toward Noreen. Her mascara has melted into black stains around her eyes. Her curly brown hair corkscrews from the messy bun that wiggles on top of her head. Fatigue dulls her light brown eyes. Noreen licks her bottom lip and glares at me. "We're not allowed to cook after 7 because Noreen needs absolute silence and her room sits right beside the kitchen. In fact, Noreen's room was originally part of the kitchen until our landlord decided to redesign the space and add an extra bedroom. Noreen is in her fifth year of medical studies, and she barely sleeps, never mind doing anything fun. She spends most of her time in the library, or in her room preparing for endless tests. Noreen has officially banned the rest of us from walking, talking, cooking, watching TV, or even turning on the lights on the first floor after 7. "Sorry," I say. "I just got home and I'm starving." I look into her eyes. Tiny red veins creep across her eyeballs. "I'm just making some noodles." I drop the tomatoes and the noodles into the boiling water. They don't smell, and I'll be done in a few minutes. William presses his lips together and rolls his eyes. He twirls around and stops with his back to Noreen. William just got home from work. He ran into me in the kitchen while I was cooking. We chatted a bit, at a normal volume, but of course, that's considered overly loud in Noreen's dictionary. I can't focus. Noreen's words tremble. "I have a midterm tomorrow, and I haven't slept in 2 days." Her voice breaks. The tip of her nose turns red, and her face wrinkles. "I told you guys not to cook after 7. I can hear and smell everything from my room, and I'm going crazy." "Uh-huh." William shrugs and shoots me an I can't care less look from the corner of his eyes. "Could you guys just keep it down?" Noreen twists her fingers together and pulls on the bottom of her oversized pajama shirt. I really have to study." She cuts me off. Her voice blasts. "But we've got to eat, you know." William spins on the round black dining chair to face Noreen again. He raises his arms and flips his palms in the air. "I'll be done very soon. I just got home from my night class. I'm sorry, but I gotta eat." I take in a long, deep breath and gaze at Noreen's watery eyes. "I'm tired of putting up with this. You guys stomping around on the first floor, talking so loudly, watching TV at night at such a high volume, cooking in the kitchen at night, screaming on the second floor, and playing music in the shower." Noreen screams. Her shoulders shudder. Her face turns red and tears sparkle in her eyes. I bite my bottom lip. A stream of hair falls out of her bun and cascades down the side of her face, over a cheek slightly puffy from lack of sleep. I drop my eyes to the ground and start to count the white tiles on the kitchen floor. William clenches his fist and throws me an angry look. I know he wants me to stand up and protest, but I can't bring myself to do it. I mean, yes, Noreen is selfish and crazy, but she has her reasons. How can I say anything to the poor girl now? Besides, she is moving out at the end of the semester, so we won't have to deal with this much longer. "I've put up with everything in this house," Noreen sniffles. Tears escape from her eyes as she blinks. "I never go up to your floor, but you guys just come down here and do anything you want like no one else lives here." "Well, that's because the kitchen and the TV are on your floor," William says in a cranky voice. "We don't have anything on our floor." Noreen inhales. She crosses her arms and cups her elbows with her palms. Tears run down her cheeks, drawing 2 black lines on her face. Her toes curl on the floor. "I'm sorry." I turn off the stove and pour the noodle soup into a bowl. The overhead fan hums like a nest of bees. I pick up my bowl and turn off the kitchen light. I guess I'll have to dig around in the fridge on our floor if I'm still hungry. Noreen sniffles again. Now you have the floor all to yourself, I sigh, and pat her on the shoulder with my empty hand. Good luck with your midterms. I glimpse at the clock as I pass by. Green numbers blink on the screen. 8:05. Now I really wish I could have a bite of one of those sausage breakfast wraps I had at Tim Hortons this morning. I haven't eaten anything since then. Noreen looks up at me with a blank face. Her eyes reflect the light from the stove. A lake of tears glimmers in her eyes. Her cracked lips purse together. Thanks. Noreen wipes her face with the back of her hand and walks back to her room. I glance at William and tilt my head toward the stairs. Let's go. William climbs up the stairs with me. He turns to me as we reach the top. Do you know she once knocked on my door when Jillian and I were... William swallows. Doing it. He leans on the wall at the top of the stairs and raises his eyebrows. She told us to keep it down. No kidding. My eyes expand. That's ridiculous. Bang. Noreen's door slams with a loud thump. Move out, bitch. William shouts. His voice booms through the entire house. She can hear you. I put my index finger in front of my lips. Shush. She can hear whatever she wants. I don't give a fuck. William slaps his hand on the wall and stomps back to his room. I look down at Noreen's door. My belly growls. Just 2 more months. 2 more months, then she'll be gone, I tell myself. Parasite Crisis by Zili Wang. Spring rain gives me shivers, especially at night. I shut the front door on the downpour behind me and drag my overloaded backpack into the hallway. Rainwater drips from the tip of my hood and splashes into a circle of water on the wooden floor. The ends of my hair whirl together and stick to my soaked jacket. I kick off my boots, set them on the shoeboard, and tiptoe through the puddle in stocking feet. I cringe as the water seeps through my socks. Lily, Mary Lou's voice blasts from the living room. Can you come over here? I sigh. I don't have any energy to deal with this woman right now. Fourth year of university means 6 courses each semester, and that leaves me with a maximum of 5 hours of sleep after countless late nights spent in the library. Mary Lou, a middle-aged divorced Filipino lady, lives on the first floor of our student housing. She's lived here since 2010, way before the rest of us. Because of what she calls her senior status in the house, she likes to exert control over everything. I drag my weary legs to the kitchen. A shiny set of knives rest in a brand new wooden knife stand on the counter. A round glass spice pellet perches on the kitchen table. It seems our new housemate Lisa has brought in some new toys for the kitchen. I glance at the electric clock on the stove as I pass the kitchen. Green numbers blink back at me. 11:23. Hi, Mary Lou. I force my lips into a smile. How come you're home tonight? Mary Lou works as a social worker at a Toronto rehab. She usually works night shift since most of the drug heads, drunks, and homeless people come to the rehab shelter at night. Mary Lou stands by the couch, holding a bottle of mysterious liquid in her hands. I canceled work tonight because I didn't feel well today. The corners of her lips droop. She points at our couch. I think I've got bitten by some parasite on the couch. What? I scan the entire living room. The TV sits silently on top of the brown wooden TV stand. The Wilton lampshade paints the walls beige, and the green couch with the striped pattern stretches beside the window like a sleeping beauty. Mary Lou throws me a stern look, her eyebrows locked together. Don't come close to the couch. We have a parasite crisis. I bite on my bottom lip. I don't understand what she's talking about. It's Lisa, I'm telling you. It must be her. Mary Lou furrows her brows at me. She raises her left hand, puts it close to her nose, and smells her fingers with a bitter face. I'm spraying fabric clear, and it stinks. Lisa must have brought in lice or some other parasite when she brought in her little girl and the dog. Lisa is our new tenant, a 50-year-old lady from Windsor. She moved in 2 weeks ago, on a short-term lease, into one of the rooms in our basement. We barely go downstairs to the basement, so we don't see her often. But she comes upstairs to the first floor to use the kitchen and the living room. We all know that Mary Lou doesn't get along with Lisa. But Lisa is moving out in a few weeks, so none of us took the time to figure out what was going on between the two of them. I mean, they're both adults. They'll get over it. Do you remember when Lisa brought over her granddaughter? The little mixed kid with the black curls and her dog? Mary Lou sprays at the couch and repeats her question. Don't you remember? I don't think it's them, though, I reply. They've only been here once. You saw how dirty that little girl was. Lisa doesn't know how to take care of children, Mary Lou mumbles. And the dog. That dog looked like it hadn't had a shower in years. Well, if there really is a parasite problem, we should tell our landlord Maria. I run my fingers through my hair, trying to come up with a way to soothe Mary Lou. Maybe she'll know how to eliminate the parasite. I already warned everyone in the house not to come into the living room, especially near the couch. Mary Lou locks her eyes with mine. William already knows about our parasite situation, and now you do too. We're just gonna quarantine the living room for now until Maria comes and disinfects it thoroughly. Yeah. My eyes wander away to the white working table beside the backyard door. Several Spanish books lie scattered across the table. Maria left them here for us to learn Spanish, but none of us have actually picked them up. I don't want you guys to get bitten like I did. Mary Lou's voice cracks. She rolls up the sleeve on her right arm and reveals a band-aid patch. That's the bite. I covered it with bactericidal cream and a band-aid. She peers into my eyes. The wrinkles near her nose deepen. Lisa cannot get any more of us infected. We'll be fine. I gently rub her shoulder and try to comfort her. She has to move out. She has to. Mary Lou turns to the couch and presses the trigger of the spray bottle again. Mist shoots out of the bottle and floats in the air. I let out a long breath. Fatigue creeps up my body from the bottom of my feet. Good night, Mary Lou. I hoist my backpack from the floor. I gotta go upstairs and finish my paper now. She nods, puts down the bottle of spray, and grabs her phone from the table. I'm calling Maria to tell her about this now. The ceiling fan whooshes and stirs up the moist air. I turn around and walk to the staircase. William's door creaks open as I reach the top of the stairs. William peeks through the opening and greets me with a smile. Do you know about the parasite problem downstairs? I ask with a lowered voice. Uh-huh, he blinks. It's no big deal. Mary Lou's just overreacting, as always. William shrugs. I'm sure it'll be fine in no time. I lean over the stairs and glance down into the living room. Mary Lou stands in the middle of the room with her phone pressed against her ear. Her voice echoes throughout the entire house. I look out the window at the top of the stairs. The moon hides under thick, dark clouds as the cypress tree in our backyard dances in the wind. What a wonderful night.
That was Zili Wong reading her stories, Territory and Parasite Crisis. Our next story, though still set in residence, is more of a study of character, friendship, and the quest for a deeper meaning in life. When a young woman's initial attraction to a young missionary results in a newfound connection to God, she questions the source and validity of her conviction and looks to her friend for support. Let's listen now as Zili Wong reads her story, Believe.
Believe by Zili Wong. May 2014. How about this one? Eliana darts into my room and spins in front of me. The bottom of her lacy white dress circles in the air. You look absolutely amazing. I jump out of my bed and flash her a smile. Eliana looks like an angel glowing in the sunlight. I've known Eliana since my first year at university. On my first day at school, when she sat next to me in our calculus class, I knew we would be best friends. After our first year, we both wanted to move out of residence. Eliana found a nice house in a beautiful neighborhood not too far from school. So we moved in together and became housemates. Eliana chose the room with the walk-in closet. I took the room with the big window that has a wonderful view of the front lawn, the sky-reaching pine tree, and the beautiful red house across the street. Today is a big day for Eliana. She's getting baptized in a Mormon church in North York, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Do you think I should straighten my hair? Eliana asks. She stands by my door, holding a blue hair straightener in her left hand. I mean, the holy water will wet my hair anyway, but... Well, I stroll toward her and flick the bottom of her hair. As long as it doesn't block you from your God. Lily, she raises her voice and slaps me on the shoulder. Baptism is not a joke. I know. I'm just being silly, I grin. I'm very happy for you. I'm very happy, too. Eliana wraps her arms around me and gives me a warm hug. The morning sunlight gushes in through my window and sparkles in her eyes. Oh shit, it's already 7:35. Eliana screams as her eyes land on the clock. She lets go of my shoulders and presses her palms against her cheeks. I only have 25 minutes left to get ready. I laugh. Go ahead. You're the star today. Eliana turns around and rushes to the bathroom. A flowery smell of perfume drifts behind her. May 2013. I ran into two missionaries at the university today. Eliana howls as she steps inside the house. Excitement and joy fills her voice. Missionaries, are you sure they're not just a couple of kids trying too hard to get your attention? I shout back from the living room. The afternoon sunlight blazes through the white curtain and warms my skin. My favorite show, Modern Family, plays on the TV. My night class was cancelled, so I came home early today and decided to cut myself some slack and enjoy my show on this beautiful afternoon. No, stop teasing me. I'm serious. Eliana chuckles as she enters the living room. She sets her school bag on the table and sits beside me on the couch. They told me so much about God. I think I will attend their weekly meeting this Saturday, just to clear up my mind. Eliana's silvery voice rings. She grabs my left hand and stares into my eyes. Her big brown eyes sparkle with curiosity. If you think that's a good idea, sure, I reply with a pranky smile. But are you sure they're real missionaries? Lily, Eliana giggles and tickles my neck. The warmth of early May fills the room. We both laugh. August 2013. I'm going to the ball with Missionary T this Sunday, before his going away party, Eliana announces. She sits on the edge of her bed, cross-legged, and taps her knuckles on the massive accounting textbook on her lap. A wide smile blooms on her face. I sit on Eliana's black leather office chair with my arms wrapped around my knees. The chair squeaks as I spin back and forth. I raise one eyebrow and squint at her. Is that right, you two? Eliana has been seeing this missionary, Anthony T, for over 3 months now. They talk to each other on the phone every day, and they spend quite a lot of time together. Eliana meets Anthony at school, or in the Mississauga Public Library for some God lessons, and they go to church together every Sunday. Eliana brought Anthony home several times. I thought Anthony was some middle-aged businessman the first time I saw him. He showed up in a well-fitted black suit, ironed white shirt, shiny black Oxford shoes, black socks, black tie, and a silver tie clip. He looked like a regular guy, 6 feet tall, well-dressed, standing by the fridge holding a glass of water that Eliana gave him, until he started telling me about God and their church. At first, I didn't like Anthony because he always tries to push things that he believes onto me. But then I saw how happy Eliana is when he's around. How excited Eliana gets when we talk about him, and how much Eliana looks forward to seeing him. And I started to like him as well. Their church is hosting a youth dance this Sunday, and Anthony invited Eliana to the ball, as he stated. I'm pretty sure Anthony likes me. Eliana lowers her eyes to the beige carpet. A dimple appears on the upper right corner of her lips as she grins. I can feel it from the letters he wrote me, and I feel the same about him. I can see that. I sip orange juice from my cup. The glass of grape juice on Eliana's table jolts as she puts the book down. The ceiling light gently fills the room with soft orange light. When I look at him, I can feel the Holy Spirit. Eliana twirls the ends of her hair and raises her shoulders. A chilly night breeze flows into her room through the half-opened window. A perfectly round full moon hangs low in the sky. I can see our future when he looks at me, she mumbles. Her lips curl upward. A smile cracks her face. I nod. I know you should let a girl go on when she starts to talk about the boy she likes. Anthony is getting transferred to Windsor next week, and then to the States. Eliana scratches her forehead and explains, we'll be together after he gets done his mission. That'll be... She bends her fingers and counts their time apart. 6 months from now. I purse my lips together and gaze at her. That's half a year, I think to myself. Half a year could change a lot of things. Eliana looks up at me with a worried face. Doubt and anxiety flicker in her eyes. He doesn't have a phone there, but we can always write to each other, right? Eliana twists her fingers and continues. I can wait for him. Nothing's going to change, right? I nod again and chug the rest of my orange juice. February 2014. Eliana curls on her bed, cradling a stack of letters in her hands. Tears pour from her eyes and slide down her cheeks. The teddy bear I gave her last Christmas lies beside her like a guardian angel. She's gone, Lily. She's gone. Eliana whispers. Anthony went back to Vancouver, his hometown, after he completed his mission. He told Eliana that he's not coming back here, so she shouldn't wait for him anymore. They've been sending each other letters every week for the last 6 months. Anthony comforted Eliana when she got upset about her school and family. And Eliana has been the biggest support and solace for Anthony for the last months of his journey as well. She patiently listened to every single problem he had on his mission and provided him with cheerful advice. It seemed like they'd decided on each other, and all they needed was a heartwarming reunion. Now, I don't even know if it's just because of Anthony, or if I really do have a special connection with God. Eliana sits up and sobs with a husky voice. She bends her knees and buries her head in between her legs. Eliana weeps like a hurt puppy. What about the Holy Spirit that you felt? I ask with my arms crossed. My back twinges from leaning against the cold wooden closet door. My heart wrinkles when tear drops rush down Eliana's face. I thought I felt the Holy Ghost. I thought God had summoned me. But now that I think about it, most of the spirits I felt were from Anthony. Eliana's voice drops low. She squeezes the letters in her hands. The pages rumple noisily. I go and sit next to her on the bed. Part of it, maybe. I mean, of course your feelings for him will affect your judgment. I pat her shoulder. But I don't think it was all him. I need some time to reconsider the whole church thing. Eliana lifts up her head and sniffles. She wipes her face with the back of her hand. I don't want to make any decision based on some mixed feelings. She crumples the pages into a bowl and tosses it into the garbage can beside her desk. There goes Anthony. Eliana smirks. Yeah, clear up your mind and see if you really have that connection with God. Follow your heart. I pat her on the shoulder again. Eliana's gaze wanders to the window, to the stately pine tree in our backyard. My dear Heavenly Father, she groans. I will wait with patience for my answer. May 2014. In our bathroom, Eliana stares into her own eyes in the mirror. The orange ceiling light shines, the fan hums, the metal mirror frame outlines her face. Her smile slowly transforms into a look of determination. I'm becoming God's child today.
That was Zili Wong reading her story, Believe. In our final story tonight, we travel to China with our narrator, who journeys home at the end of the school year to spend time with her family. From her lifestyle as an independent adult in Canada, she returns to that of a child who must face the wrath of an exacting mother, determined, it seems, to impose her own dreams onto her daughter. What transpires between father and daughter is more far-reaching and thought-provoking than what we expect, and our narrator is forced to begin the process of recognizing her father and her mother as more than her parents. Let's listen now as Zili Wang reads her final story tonight, Crossfire.
Crossfire by Zili Wang. How many times do I have to tell you I hate accounting? I kick off my yellow SpongeBob slippers and crash onto the couch. Mother leans back against the wooden dining chair. That's her favorite spot in the living room. Her hot tea steams in the air-conditioned room. The chandelier fills the living room with soft champagne light. The crystal pendants shine like diamonds. Mother bought this fancy chandelier 3 years ago when we moved into our new house. Even now, she occasionally brags about how hard she fought for this magnificent ceiling decor. It's all for our beautiful home, she says. Now, Mother stares at me as if I'm from another planet. The silence boils in the living room. I just showed Mother the transcript from my first year at university. My face burns under Mother's frigid glare. I lock my eyes onto the balcony window. The sun falls under Changsha's industrial skyline, and the clouds burn red. Mother stomps toward me. Why on earth would someone fail such an easy exam? She blinks for a few seconds. It almost seems like she doesn't understand what I just showed her. Mother raises her voice. We paid everything for you to study in Canada, and you failed your course. Is that how you appreciate our hard work? I lower my eyes to my pink pajama shirt and count the round white buttons. I never liked accounting, I shout. Why do you always have to push everything you want on me? I pick at the floral lace cushions on the couch with the tips of my fingernails. The cushions still smell like the lavender laundry softener Mother rinsed them with this morning. I kick the edge of the red U tea table. The hard wood makes my toes twinge. So what if I failed it? I don't even care. I take in a deep breath and look back at Mother. How you... I wish I never had a daughter like you. Mother storms out of the house and slams the door behind her. I feel something cracking inside of me. It's mid-July and my fingers feel like ice. I let out my breath, feeling like I just lost a battle. What's going on in here? Dad rushes into the living room, wearing his summer robe. He still has a pen clamped between his index and middle finger. I can see ink stains on his palm. She left. I roll my eyes to the front door. How have you managed to put up with her for all these years? I ask. Dad smiles and pats me on my back with his warm hand. Because I love her, and I know that she will never leave me or us. But she's always so mean to me and even to you. I don't understand why Dad is always such a gentleman to Mother, no matter what she does or says. Even though she has a temper and she always yells at us, I know she means well. Dad shrugs and gives me another warm smile. Your mother and I have a life together. We know each other to the bones. Dad sits down on the couch and blows on the cup of hot tea Mother left on the tea table. I know your mom loves you. She loves you so much. She spent 20 of her most beautiful years on you, and she never complained about anything. But why don't you stand up for me when she insults me? Because I don't dare to piss her off. Dad wrinkles his eyebrows and puts on a pranky smile. I kick the tea table again, harder this time. tea spills over the rim of the cup. Dad shakes his head and puts his arm around my shoulder, because I don't want to make her upset. She's already angry with you, the baby girl, and she will only get more upset if I interfere. I don't want to make both of you upset. I push his arm off my shoulder. So you decided to let her insult me? Just like the time she threw away all my comic books. Dad sighs and pats me on my lap. As much as I love you, your mother is the one that I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. My job is to balance between you two and make both of you happy. Dad taps my nose with his index finger. My responsibility is to put a beautiful smile on both of you, not to make either of you girls upset. I glimpse out the balcony window again. The sun has already set under the gray skyline. Dad wraps his arm around my shoulder, lifts up the teacup from the table, and hands it to me. Now, little silly, I'm going to get your mom back. Be good at home, okay? I nod. Dad grabs his car keys and rushes out the front door with his shoes half on. Stay safe. Dad's voice flies back into the house, along with the screeching noise the tires make on the cobble driveway. I look outside, the clouds now shine like gold.
That was Zili Wong reading her story, Crossfire. This concludes Life Rattle number 1336. My name is Lori Callis. I had the pleasure of recording Zili reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune in next week for a Life Rattle classic show, hosted by Virginia Ashbery.